Welcome to Write Your Book in a Flash with Dan Janelle, the only podcast where you'll learn how successful people just like you have grown their businesses, expanded their influence, and made more money by writing a book. On each episode, you'll learn the inside secrets to help you create a book that can serve as a powerful marketing tool to skyrocket your business. I'm your host, Dan Janelle. I help thought leaders, business executives, and entrepreneurs write their books. To find out more, go to writeyourbookinaflash.com.
As a ghostwriter, we face a very important, delicate question, and that is how to interview and probe our clients. You know, and it's a funny thing because there are two stages in this. On the one hand, we are selling them and they are customers. And then after they sign up, they're our best friends, or they should be, because we have that trust established. So it's a different persona between the selling persona and now the service persona. And we're going to get into how we can build that kind of rapport so we can ask those deep personal questions that really make the book come alive. Hi, I'm Dan Janelle. I'm the author of more than a dozen books. I'm a book coach, developmental editor, and ghostwriter. I help business and medical professionals write their books, either as nonfiction or business fables. If you would like more information about my services, please go to writeyourbookinaflash.com, where you'll see lots of other great information. And we have more than 200 episodes of Write Your Book in a Flash with Dan Janelle on YouTube. Check them out so you can write and market your book effectively. Well, let's get started. Our guest today is Chris Clancy. Chris has an amazing background as a journalist and will help us open kimono and show us how to really build rapport and get the information we need to write superb books. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Dan. Did you just say open kimono?
Kimono. It's
kimono.
Yeah, we're showing it all. Yes. So, Chris, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? You have an amazing background.
Oh, gosh. Thanks, Dan. I appreciate that. Amazing background. Yeah. So I started as a journalist right out of college, English major. And I worked for a very small free newspaper, the kind of thing that would show up, you know, in the grocery stores out in Western Maryland, in a little town called Mount Airy. The Washington Post bought up all these local papers out there in the Maryland, Virginia area, all over the state. And so I worked for the Mount Airy Gazette as just a, I guess you'd call it a cub reporter type of position. And I was the only writer for the newspaper. So that was covering a lot of local politics, hyper-local politics. We're talking town council meetings, local planning and zoning commission meetings, these things that would take place, you know, for 4 hours all night as people would, you know, argue about where to put a well or, you know, how to cover up a well. And always a lot of, you know, private golf courses that wanted to buy up farmers' land and, you know, disputes around that. But one of my favorite aspects of that job was there was inevitably we had to fill up space with human interest stories. And there was a real art to that that I came to sort of realize. I was just interviewing local people with some type of, you'd say, unusual or interesting kind of either hobby or pastime or background. That was the kind of writing that I loved the most because it was just a one-on-one kind of spending some time with this person as they did something that they loved that made them a notable figure. So it was always, you know, someone who was had a blacksmithing business in their garage or, you know, a guy who had, you know, 15 miles of toy train tracks in his basement, those kinds of people, you know, notable people, the kind of thing that, you know, you might see on something like CBS Sunday Morning, but with far less celebrity involved. I loved getting to know those people in that kind of in that way, and then writing up their story from their perspective. It was a chance to be kind of, you know, as a young man, who was, you know, kind of word drunk. I loved to get kind of novelistic with these with those stories. And so from there, it just kind of, I found myself, I went to New York and I was a business journalist for a number of different newsletters and things like that. And interviews would get very complicated very quickly. I was, always talking to bankers, talking to marketing agencies. And you have to sort of very quickly get acclimated to the inside baseball language that they were using. And so that was kind of another tool I had. Am I going on too long here, Dan? Oh, should I slow now?
This is good.
Just making sure. Kind of learning the more complex terms and, you know, really sitting someone down and asking them to take time out of their busy day to explain things to me. That was a tool I picked up there that has really served me well moving forward.
Cool. Thanks. Well, you have a great background. And as a marketing guy, I might have you readjust your resume to say that you were a Cub reporter for a Washington Post affiliate news or syndicated
exactly.
newspaper. So, yeah, we always look for those kinds of bonuses. But, yeah, I was a daily newspaper reporter, too, and writing feature articles was a real pleasure. But I tell you, building rapport with people can be difficult. I remember my very first assignment as a reporter was to cover, a double murder suicide, and I had to speak to the son, the grown son, who discovered his parents, who basically decided they didn't want to live anymore, so they took some pills and overdosed and died, and it was pretty gross. But actually wanted to tell their story, which really surprised me. So tell me, how do you build rapport with your clients or your interview subjects?
Great question. It's always, you have to know going in, what the situation is. And if something is especially delicate and touchy like that, I think first and foremost, you want to go in as a human being, approaching another human being. And so what I mean by that is you want to first come to that person and say, you know, gosh, I'm sorry about everything you're going through, or I can't imagine how you must feel at this time. And just maybe get them talking tangentially about the situation. How was your morning? I can only imagine that things have been busy. Before you really kind of just march up to them and start, you know, throwing questions at them. Not everybody is ready to get down to business as soon as you walk into the room. And I think it's, when I came on and Dan, you and I were talking just now and we were talking about, just general things of life and what we're doing with our work today. It's just a way to sort of dip your toe and to realize, oh, I'm a human being and I am just coming from something in my own life, and you're a human being and you're going through this thing. And so we are first and foremost human beings before I try and, suddenly kind of, suck the information that I need out of you so I can go do my work.
Yeah, good answer. I remember the first day I was an intern, I was still in college and I had a internship and worked the morning shift and at a daily newspaper in West Virginia. And the city editor came up to me and said, we had a meeting, the city council meeting last night, and a reporter had to leave early and he couldn't speak to the councilman. So we need you to call him at home. And see, basically, your opponent called you a crook. Are you a crook? That's what I had to do. At 6 o'clock in the morning, I had to call a guy at home. His wife answers the phone. I need to speak to Charlie. He's in the shower. Well, I really need to speak to him because he's a, and how do you tell someone that somebody's called you a crook?
Right.
Not the greatest way to start a conversation. Say, no, I'm not a crook. Okay, great. He told the story. I got the quote I needed. It was like, really? This is a crazy business. But, you know, a lot of the people who will be listening to this podcast will be writing memoirs or having to dig deeper into people's stories. So start to probe into their deeper, they'll tell you like the basic ideas, but how do you subtly get them to reveal more and more pieces of the puzzle?
Well, naturally, and I think this is, you know, really very much a prerequisite to the job we're doing here, but you have to be a curious person. You have to come in wanting to know not just the important piece that they may or may not be feeling protective of. The subject may or may not want to give that up right away. And so you have to be just as interested in sort of the aspects of the story or sort of the pre-story that they are kind of gently sidling up to the meat and potatoes of the story that you're really looking for. What I mean by that is in preparing for an interview that could potentially get uncomfortable or sensitive, or maybe the subject may not feel great about addressing some controversy in their life, I find it helps to just not only have your questions prepared, of course, but you want to provide the context for how you came up with that question. A lot of times when I was interviewing these people for human interest stories or something, I would say, well, tell me about blacksmithing, because the only thing I know about blacksmithing is what I ever saw in, you know, cartoons or movies about blacksmithing. Do you get to wear one of those cool masks like in the movie, Flashdance or something? And so you're kind of, by doing that, you are showing off your ignorance in a way that I think can come back fruitfully to you, because people will sort of chuckle and say, oh, no, that's not how we do it. Let me correct you. Let me bring you out of your ignorance. And the next thing you know, they are explaining something that they have an expertise in, which is which is a level of comfort that they feel perfectly good to just wallow in for a little bit. And as you ask your questions and kind of you sort of gently kind of bring them to expand out of that comfort level. And then before you know it, you can start to think, well, now's a pretty good time to ask those sensitive questions. Maybe now that they liked me enough to have chuckled at some observation or something that I made, I can now get to the hard stuff. Does that make sense?
Oh, that's perfect. I love the story. Love the example. Just arming them is wonderful to show your ignorance. I think it's brilliant. I never did that before. I always thought that I had to be the smart guy and show them that I knew everything about, you said, banking or whatever. So let's talk a little bit more about, so I think that was excellent. Let's talk more about research. How do you research your ideas or your client, well, your interview subjects? And granted, I know a lot of what you're doing is for newspapers and it's daily reporting and whatever, but you've also written books, and all of our people here are writing books. So how can we do more research, especially for people who are not famous?
Right. Okay. excuse me.
Or the topic that they're talking on, perhaps.
Right. Well, that's the other thing. You shouldn't, if you're interviewing someone who has an expertise in any given field or who has gone through an experience that requires a fair amount of research, I don't think you need to do all that much research, at least not on the front end. I think I've never gone into an interview with more than maybe 7 or 8 questions. Those questions, though, need to they need to be organic and they need to themselves be well researched. I need to think, so if I'm talking to someone, let's say they're a doctor or something, I don't need to research every specialty that they studied for 7 years in school and then became a doctor and have, you know, 20 years of experience. I only need to think about what kind of story am I writing, and what are some questions that I can ask where they will fill in the gaps of my knowledge. And that's where you're showing off the ignorance. They have to be good questions. You only need about 7 or 8 questions. They have to be good questions. And hopefully, if there are good enough questions, you will go in new directions that you didn't see coming. And that, you know, will result in some spontaneous conversation that you can then go back and say, oh, well, this is perfect. And I didn't even know that this is what I wanted. I have found that to be really fruitful over the years that I've done this.
You know, very interesting. I love the fact that, you know, these people may not be famous and they'll tell you their personal story, but you could research their topic and know more about that and see what, say, I'm working on a book now about customer service and I can read about the trends in customer service, you know, outsourcing to the Philippines, chatbots, AI, whatever. So I can ask some intelligent questions about those things. And they're the experts. They're the ones who know the answers, not us. So we have to think about what our readers want to read and then formulate the questions from that. So I love the fact that you blend in the spontaneity as well. Just as our conversation is going here, we had a list of questions and we're not following them in order because on paper it looked like they were in order, but in real life, maybe not so. And then we're just riffing on things, which is great. Let's talk about some difficult situations because we all have them. And, you know, there are things that our clients do not want to talk about, or they really find it difficult to talk about, usually in memoirs, but other situations as well, which I'll bring up. And I have clients who can't tell stories. And I say, you know, tell me a story. And before you reply to tell me a story, which is great. But how do you handle those difficult situations where you might have a disagreement with a client about what to put in the book or in the article? How can you convince them that it's to their benefit to be vulnerable or to be open or to share this kind of story?
Well, if I could just kind of circle back with the interviewing aspect of that. Thanks, Dan. One thing that I've always found to be really helpful is if I ask a person a question, whether it's sensitive or not, and they give me an answer, and the answer might not be exactly what I was looking for, or it might not have totally answered the question in the way that I needed it to. A good tool that I've used to respond to that is I'll say something like, you know, it's a variation on, so let me get this straight. But if you can kind of, so let me get this straight, sounds like you're trying to maybe push that person around. So I don't use that. But if you say something like, well, let's see. So if I'm understanding you correctly, you are saying that dot, 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 dot. And then you can either, you know, repeat what that person has told you in the hopes that they might expound and get a little closer to what you're looking for or get a little deeper into what you're interested in. Or you can say, so if I'm understanding you correctly and you can answer the question in the way that you want. And then they might say, no, 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 that's not what I'm saying at all. And they might expound anyway. I found that has worked for me a lot. Just that, so if I'm understanding you correctly, and repeat what they said. The other thing I always like to have, and it helps with vulnerability, people will say something, and if you rush in with the next question or you rush in with the next observation, then they feel like they're off the hook. But people, like nature, they abhor the conversational vacuum. So if you ask them a somewhat uncomfortable question and they give you a pat answer or a yes or no, and you just let it lie and have the silence, they'll start to fill in. And they might be babbling, but they might give something to you that that is really good and really valuable. I don't know if you remember, Dan. I'm sure you remember, but do you remember Donald Rumsfeld? He would have these press conferences where these reporters would ask him questions about the Iraq War and, you know, what's going on in the Iraq War and why, where are the WMD and all that sort of thing. And Donald Rumsfeld would answer with these yes or no answers, very pat. And then the reporter would not say anything because he knew this trick. And Donald Rumsfeld knew the trick too. So Donald Rumsfeld was like a statue. He could just sit there in silence, and he knew that he wasn't going to give anything away because he knew that trick. And I always found that amusing. So, I mean, I don't know if that totally answers your question, Dan, about people feeling vulnerable. I think that you really just have to go back and, you know, constantly remind yourself, you know, I'm a human being first, talking to another human being. If they really, really, really don't want to talk about it, then we probably need to rethink the book itself and what their motivations are. But those are just some thoughts.
Okay, very cool. What are some don'ts? What have you learned that doesn't work? What should we avoid doing? you mentioned rushing in with the killer question first off the bat. You know, that's what else?
That's a no-no. I don't know if you've seen this, Dan, but I'm always very, very proud of myself if I get to the end of an interview or at an end of a long conversation with my subject person, and I remember to say, is there anything you wanted to add?
Good. Yeah.
Do you ever do that when you're interviewing people?
You know, I hear that a lot on podcasts when I'm a guest.
Yes.
What question should I have asked you?
Right. Yeah. And you can frame it that way. And I mean, I've written whole articles based on is there anything you want to, is there anything I'm missing here? Now that you mentioned it, you might want to think about blah, blah, blah. And then the next thing you know, you're off on a completely new direction. You've got another story for your, for the next day's issue, to be old school about it. But that can always result in some really new avenues that you might not have seen going in. As for don'ts, and Dan, maybe I might invite you to add to this, but I've only had one interview where I really regretted what I was doing. But before I dive into that, what would you say your don'ts are, Dan?
Oh, well, starting off with a hard question first, you know. You want to build rapport, you want to build trust, and then get deeper and deeper. Some other don'ts? I would say go to the bathroom before you do an interview. You never know how long it'll last, and you don't want to have to oh my God, I have to go. And hate to be gross about this, but you know, the body is the body. And actually read a book about, by an ace interviewer for the New York Times, Washington Post, you know, freelancer, who uncovered a lot of major stories. That was actually one of his tips, because he'd be in the middle of an interview and it'd be like an hour, gets longer and longer. It's like, oh my God, I wish
that. True, yeah.
You know, and suddenly it's like, you know, they're running out of the room and then the interview's over. I think researching is important to a degree, but I think being flexible enough to keep the conversation going, and you said it can go in many different directions, and that might be the better story. And I think that's when I interview my clients, we'll always have a recorder going on so we can freeform instead of like having to write down everything. And just the idea, and you freeform, and you create new ideas along the way, and then they build on that, and you build on that, and they build on that, and then you get really, really good stuff. So I think being flexible is really an important thing. So the don't would be, don't be fixed, be flexible.
I mean, and it's the same way with any kind of creative process. You have to have something of a plan going in, but you also have to realize, you know, things get crazy out there pretty quickly. And so you have to be able to sort of make small adjustments and move with, you know, where the real inspiration is coming from, or where the real, you know, the heart of this story is coming from. It's almost like, you know, being a football coach or something. You can have your plays, but, you know, once those guys are out on the field, it's kind of chaos. You're constantly reacting to new information. And if you're constantly reacting to new information, that's usually pretty good. If you're getting it all on tape, you can go back and say, well, I'll shape this in this or that way later. But as long as you're having a good conversation and that person feels like they're opening up and they, you know, they feel like they're in good hands with you, then you're in a really good spot. No, go ahead.
As a ghostwriter, how much freedom and flexibility do you think you have when they tell you a story? Do you use it word for word, or do you reshape it using your craft and your skills?
I think I'm mostly going to go out there and I'm going to say, I'll shape it to, you know, what I think the story, how I think the story needs to be told. I wrote a book for my brother-in-law. This is kind of how I got into ghostwriting. And he said, hey, you know, you're an author. Can you write a book about me and my relationship with my dogs? And I thought, oh, boy, okay. and then he said, I'll give you this much money. And I said, oh, okay, we'll do it. So, right. So I sat down with him and, you know, he's telling me his story. And I could tell right away that, you know, he kind of had the story rehearsed in his head. And he, you know, his attempts to put it down on paper didn't quite match what he had in his head. And so, you know, just the inevitable sort of ghostwriter client situation. And so it was up to me to kind of make that story of his pop, this story that he had in his head. So, you know, because we already had a close relationship, I was able to kind of ask him other questions that I knew things about his life that, you know, your average ghostwriter wasn't going to know. And then I brought in other voices to kind of get a little bit more context or to get another side of the story about, you know, why they bought this dog and then why they got this dog and why they had to get rid of this dog because this dog was biting this dog. And I realized after a few kind of pretty futile attempts to write the story the way he wanted to see it, I realized, oh, I could just make this, I'll just make this an oral history. And so sort of his voice was the primary voice, but then other kind of voices would chime in with their take on the same situation. And therefore, it was really easy to write that way because I would just kind of transcribe what I had in the recordings. But it also, it made for really entertaining reading because you would get sort of, you kind of captured everybody's voice as they were in its most unguarded form, which was just in that conversational form. And I didn't need to get to, you know, I didn't need to fill it out with any purple prose, which might not have been appreciated anyway.
Sure. What advice would you give to someone looking to improve their interviewing skills? Are there any books or resources or general tips that you have?
I've never read a book about interviewing. I'm ashamed to say. I really only did it through sort of repetition, you know, these constant little human interest stories, constant phone interviews, where I would, you know, not be afraid to show my ignorance. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I had to talk to a mortgage lender for a newsletter called Home Equity News that I was the editor of, where I didn't wind up saying, okay, just please, can you explain this to me like I'm 6 years old? Mm. I just don't understand what a credit default swap is supposed to be. You have to give me an example, you know, and they would do it because they'd be happy to do it. Okay, let's say I loan you $10, and they would get right into it that way. So repetition is the way to go, and I would say if you ever find yourself in trouble, repeat their answer back to them in that sort of, if I'm understanding you correctly, and then just never forget to say, is there anything you want to add at the end? That's my best piece of advice I could possibly come up with.
Great. So as we close out this interview, is there any question I should have asked you? And is there anything you'd like to add?
Oh, man. Oh, I should have prepared something. We should have started this whole new conversation, this fruitful avenue we could go down that way. Hold on. Let me take a look at this. My other thing is, I think you had an idea to ask me, Dan. You said at some point about sort of balancing that personal style of the interviewer with the interviewee. You know, where's the right balance there that you can kind of get where the person feels comfortable enough to talk freely, but you can also kind of get what you want. And I would say that comes through the questions. And that's why you really only need a strong handful of very thoughtful, very inspired questions. That's what I think. That leaves you open for the spontaneity, and you can kind of go down blind alleys if you want. But you can kind of always circle back to these well thought out, well contextualized questions, where you not only are asking an intelligent question, but you're kind of letting the subject know where you're coming from in asking that question. I think that's really important. But no, to answer your question in my very long winded way, no, there's nothing else I feel like I need to add. This has been great.
I think you've added a lot, even though you said you didn't add a lot. You added a lot. Chris, as we wind up here, tell us, who is your ideal client and how can they get in touch with you?
Oh, my gosh. Let's see. My ideal client is someone who feels like they have some real advice to impart based on a large, maybe even a lifetime of experience. I love the people of a certain age who have seen some success in their career, who now want to show what they have learned over the years. That's my ideal client, someone who has those real pieces of advice.
Right. And how can they get in touch with you?
Should I just give email? I mean, heck, I'll give my home address if you want.
What website is good?
Oh, website, you can find me at clancypartners.com, clancypartners.com. That's the business that my wife and I run out of Nashville, Tennessee.
Cool. Thank you so much for being with us today. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We have more than 200 episodes of Write Your Book in a Flash with Dan Janelle on YouTube. Check them out so you can write your book in a flash. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Write Your Book in a Flash podcast with Dan Janelle, the only podcast that shows you exactly how people just like you have built their businesses by writing a book. If you'd like to write your book but don't know where to start, you can find great information at writeyourbookinaflash.com. If you're ready to take your next step to write the book that can transform your business, I invite you to schedule a free, no-obligation consulting call with me by going to writeyourbookinaflash.com. We'll be back next week with another insightful interview to help you become a top business leader.